Welcome to The Author's Tale, produced and presented by me, Stephanie Frewen, and brought to you by Edition Audiobooks. The Author's Tale is a series of casual conversations with prominent and influential New Zealand authors who have made their mark in New Zealand and overseas. They have often gone under the radar in their home country, but have contributed to New Zealand's cultural history in a way that if they were musicians, would be considered rock stars of their genre. They are the word stars of New Zealand literature. Not wanting to focus on a particular book or work, I'm more interested in speaking with the author in their own surroundings and getting an idea of where they have come from and what has influenced their journey to date. We meet where possible in their homes, not in a studio, so you may hear others moving around or pets coming to say hi. We drink coffee or tea and eat fruitcake made using my mother's recipe. She was the person who encouraged my love of a good book and great writing, so it seems fitting to include her. This is the third episode of my very casual chat with Christchurch-based award-winning writer of children's, young adult, short stories and flash fiction, Heather McQuillan. If you haven't listened to parts one and two, where we discuss her first novel, the award-winning Mind Over Matter, and her dystopian young adult novel, Nest of Lies, I highly recommend you do. Coming up, we are all things flash fiction and her collection of flashes titled Where Oceans Meet. If you've never heard of flash fiction or want to give it a go, Heather is the expert and this is the episode for you.
So that was a very last minute.
Wow.
The
funny
name
how these things
in
come.
That little addition. But that I was so thrilled when that just came. That was the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our titles are so hard.
Titles are so hard, but I just love that. I just thought that was, and it just summed up the book absolutely brilliantly. And I've said about writing for an accent. Well, that's all my notes. I think I've think about that one. Now, Where Oceans Meet.
Completely different.
Completely different. Now, I have to say, this one came to my attention, though, years ago. I think I told you it was, this is ages ago. I told you that I was reading I used to go to the library there in Christchurch and I'd get the English magazine just called
That's right.
Writing.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was reading it and I'd sit there and flick through and I was reading the book reviews and da da. And then it had Where Oceans Meet by Heather McQuillan. And it had the loveliest review. And I remember saying to you, oh, I read this great review of your book, Where Oceans Meet, in this magazine. You said, oh, I haven't seen it. I haven't. And then have I been able to? And
I cannot find it.
No. I have never seen it again since. And it really annoys me. And so I do have my eyes. When I find it, will come across my path one day and I will give it to you. Because it was a lovely, and that's what brought this book to my attention, was
so
that review.
So what happened for me? So we've got to the earthquakes with Nest of Lies.
Yes, and I have to also say that Nest of Lies, that's published by Scholastic. Mind Over Matter was...
Scholastic.
Yep. There we go. Now, this one's different altogether.
So this one's very different. So after the earthquakes, I had another couple of novels that I'd written that had sat with the publishers, and one was 15 months and one was about 18 months, with them going... Or we do like it, but, and then no.
Yeah.
So, as happens, it's such a slow process to try and find the right time for a novel. And post-earthquake, I was so busy. I ended up acting principal for a term. I then was back in the classroom. I'd been a walk-in deputy principal. I was the senko. I was had a class of my own. I was the team leader. I was overwhelmed with work and just that looking after the people who needed looking after the earthquakes. And I wasn't finding time for myself to be able to immerse myself in my writing, because that takes time. You have to carve out time for that to happen. So I went and did a poetry workshop at the WEA with the amazing James Norcliffe, who I know you've also interviewed.
Yeah.
What a wonderful teacher, what a wonderful person and contributor to so many fields of literature in New Zealand. Mm. And I was writing poems, and I just said one day after a few weeks there, oh, all my poems turn into stories. And James said, have you heard of this thing called flash fiction? Mm-hmm. Which I hadn't. Mm. And so I discovered flash fiction, where you get to write a story in a very short space. Yeah. So I entered the National Flash Fiction Day competition with my first story, and it made the long list, and I got to meet people in Christchurch who were writing flash fiction. And at that time, Christchurch was such a centre because Frankie McMillan was teaching at Hagley Writers Institute, and all of her students were writing flash fiction. And so now a lot of my colleagues and friends are these amazing flash fiction writers who came through Hagley. So when it came to a few years later and I made the decision that the space I was in at that time for teaching was not working for me, it wasn't good for me, I left teaching and what was I going to do? And I wanted to go back and study and I wasn't quite sure, you know, it had been a long time since I'd studied. What would I do? Would I do a master's in education? And then, well, why wouldn't I do a master's in writing? Because that's so much more fun. So I did. And I did my master's of creative writing through Massey University. And part of that program is that you have to do a thesis. And part of your thesis is the critical, where you do a whole lot of research, isn't it? Academic research, and produce your critical thesis. And you also produce a creative component, which is your writing. So I thought, well, I could write a novel, a children's novel. That could be what I work on. And I could, oh, flash fiction will be so much easier. I thought, it'll be so much easier. There, I thought. Because it could be just lots, it's just lots of little short stories. And I could,
turn those out, no problem.
Pop those out, one after the other. So that's what I did. And I put forward my proposal. And at that stage, flash fiction wasn't well known, certainly in academic circles. So there was a little bit of questioning about what was this, and not really serious writing, you know, so on. But I had a wonderful, wonderful supervisor who has since gone on and written his own flash fiction pieces. And so I worked on this. And so my research thesis was around, how do you write can you tell a story in such a short space as 100 words or 200 words, 300 words? So flash fiction, I mean, they talk about it going up to around about 1,000. But because I was used to writing for Flash Frontier, which is a New Zealand online journal, which is 250 words, or National Flash Competitions, which are around 300, that was where I was finding most of my writing. So the longest story in there is 999 words, because I was not going to go to 1,000. Another little game I played with myself.
Brilliant.
And most of them are around the 250, 300, 350. So I think the shortest one in there is 48 words. So I did a lot. It was that research. It was reading. I read a lot of flash fiction, international flash fiction, local flash fiction, and selected out some pieces to analyse and say, how did they do this? How did they make this into a whole story? What did they do? So that was great. I really, but writing the critical thesis was so hard. Because it was academic writing, and I hadn't done that
for a long time.
At that level. And there was the collection then put together. And I still remember asking Frankie how to put together a collection, and she was, oh, well, you put all the pages out on the floor. And you... So I did, and I had the floor here covered in the pages and shifted and moved and where they all fitted and how they flowed together and what the main themes are. So tell me what the main themes are. What did you pick up? What
Well, obviously they all reflect the title, Where Oceans Meet.
Whether that's people, places.
Exactly.
That collision of people.
Absolutely. And I think, the thing what I loved about it is that they go from being the, there was some sadness to hope, to humour. Like, you cover everything again, you know. There was a couple that stood out for me, and I've got my little marks here. Oh, so this one here, this is possibly your shortest one, maybe, the 48 words. No, it might be a bit more than that.
Which is this one?
10 in a packet.
Oh, yes, that is very good.
So, yeah. Read that for me.
10 in a packet. 10 in a packet. Crayon voices call from the driveway, but before I can locate their whereabouts, they scoot off, leaving only a waxy residue on the asphalt. When it rains, you can see the outlines of children who have grown out of their skins.
Now, when I read that, I think that's super. I loved that. And my little note here is prose or poem?
Yes.
And this is the thing, isn't it, when it comes to short
So, flash fiction, there is this absolute liminal space that's between the prose poem and flash fiction.
Yes.
And I'm going to quote Frankie McMillan. Yeah. And she has said, it's whatever the poet, the writer calls it. So if I'm saying this is a prose poem, it is a prose poem. Yeah. So, which is very funny because on Thursday this coming week, it's National Flash Fiction Day.
Yes.
And I'm going to be reading a micro piece there that started as a poem. And if you...
Yeah.
What I did?
Yeah.
Right, pull it back.
Yeah.
Put it into prose.
Yeah.
Now what do I change?
Yeah.
Now can I tweak this bit here and tweak this bit here? Yeah. So there is a lot of, particularly the micro pieces started. So that was a poem originally.
Yeah, and to me, as soon as I read that, I thought, to me, I read that as a poem.
Yeah.
And but I just thought the imagery in it.
Is there enough of story, of character, of change, of longing, of something there that might make it story?
Yeah, but I think poems are story.
Poems can be story.
Yeah. So I to me it's more, I sort of looked at that more in the, sort of the depth of imagery within a short space that you provided. And it's so, I mean, it's, the imagery is huge in that. I loved it. And that just shows how clever you are with your words. Really, really clever with your words. I thought that was fabulous. And yeah, to me, I would almost have that printed up somewhere, hanging on a wall. You know, you read it, and then you read it again, and then you can just see it sparkling to life.
So I think what's really interesting, particularly in the New Zealand flash fiction world, is you and I'm waiting with bated breath to see the winners come up this year. Because
did you enter?
Yes, but I wasn't in the... I didn't get the long list for this year. Mm. I won it in 2016. In 2016, I won the Flash Fiction Award and the Micro.
Yes.
So that was a bit of an astonishing year. Yeah. And that maybe had spurred me on to think maybe I could do this thing and write a book and do this thesis.
So. You can definitely do this thing ever. Definitely.
Other people thought that was okay. Yeah. And that's the interesting thing about competitions is... that validation. If you make the, I always say to people, look, if you made the long list, your writing's good enough for sure.
Yeah.
Because from there, it's very subjective.
Absolutely.
As to what tweaks, what else they've got that's there, what they've seen a lot of or what they're looking for. So a lot of the writing now coming through is hybrid. It's prose poem-y, hybrid-y story-ish.
Totally.
I think I veer mostly to story rather than poetry, but there are poetic
influences
that come into the writing.
Now,
the
as a complete contrast...
What's the other one you've got? Let me see what you've got.
There's a complete contrast, which I think by saying the two, totally I think sums up just how a bit of everything in this book, and if you want to pick up a book... And great for being on a plane or a... Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's perfect. You can just read and you can...
But they're also... It's not for people who have got short levels of concentration, which I've been told, it's just for people who haven't got much time to read or whatever. You actually... It's like poetry. You do have to read them again.
Yes, you do. You do. Sometimes you think, oh, I might have missed something or let me go back and read that again. But I thought this was superb and I loved it because... I actually wrote a script going back 20 years ago, which was in a way kind of similar to the story. And I read it, went, "Oh my goodness, this is so funny!" But I want you to read.
I was guessing what it was, and it is exactly what I thought you would have picked.
Which I thought, how funny is that?
This is again, it's I will read it.
Go on.
But it's real, and it's got a sharpness to it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A Fish Dinner and a Fable.
Yes.
She started it by asking, "How's your fish?" He was delighted by its moistness, grilled to perfection. She tasted a morsel with her fork. "Pan-fried? No, grilled. I'm certain the menu said pan-fried." Then she added, in such a way as to pretend a safer uncertainty, "but maybe I read that wrong." The fish caught in her husband's throat. "Why do you always have to contradict?" But she could only remember all the times she had held her tongue. "We could ask for the menu back and check. Why do they always take the menu away so you can't check what you've ordered?" She said this in a light way, but it was too late. He put down his fork and gulped wine. In that moment, she remembered a fable of a peasant woman and her peasant husband arguing over how a meadow had been mown, by scythe or by shears. The peasant husband, angered at his wife repeating an opinion contrary to his own, had thrown her to the ground and sliced out her tongue. Thinking that would settle the argument, the peasant husband once again asserted his claim that it was a scythe that had been used on the meadow. The peasant wife made a snipping motion with her fingers. The wife in the restaurant mused that this fable had been about misogyny and the silencing of the opinions of women. So, when the waitress came to fill their glasses, the wife, not looking at her husband, said, "Can you tell us how the fish was cooked?" Snip, snip, went the husband's teeth on the tines of his fork.
I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I loved it. And the thing, and I, on a number of levels, I thought it was, I laughed, thought it was very humorous, disturbingly humorous in a way. But what I thought was interesting about it is so often, and I've tried writing flash fiction myself, and I don't think I'm overly good at it at all, and I think I'm a little bit afraid of what to put in and what to take out. And what I thought was great about this is you, it's almost like you don't treat it like a short, like a flash, piece of flash fiction. You treat it like a full-blown story by saying, in that moment, she remembered a fable. It's like, oh, she's going to tell us another story within the story.
A story within a story.
The story within the story. And I thought, so often you wouldn't think, you'd go, oh, no, I don't have time for that. I don't have the word count to do that. But you do.
And you do.
You do. And the way you did it was just superb. Has that won anything?
No, that's only ever been published in that anthology. I don't think I've ever submitted it elsewhere.
Well, I think it's maybe just superb. To me, that is flash fiction in a nutshell. How many words is that, do you think?
I don't know. It'd be about 300, yeah.
Yeah, about 300. Yeah, no, there's something to be said for the person who can, yeah. I just thought that was fabulous. So now, also the thing that struck me with Where Oceans Meet. So now, this was published in Oxford.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Oh, Lord. So this is a little bit of a sad story. This is my sadness about this book.
Oh.
It is very much a New Zealand book. You will pick... Yeah. There are very New Zealand themes and stories and things in there. It had been with a very reputable, wonderful publisher for quite some time who said, "I really want this, I really want this."
Yeah.
But there was a board decision.
Oh.
And it was University Press. And I got the call that no, they had decided they wouldn't be publishing fiction. They wouldn't take it. So I felt that horrible. You know, it's horrible when that happens.
Yeah.
So I sat in bed the next morning, and I don't know why I remember it was a Thursday. But the Thursday morning,
these kind of moments you do remember.
I didn't have work that day or didn't have to go teaching or anything, and I said, "I am not getting out of bed until I have submitted this to 5 smaller presses."
Yes.
So I went through, I did some research, and Reflex Press had opened about 2 weeks ago asking for manuscripts, two weeks prior. Yes. So them and another 4 small presses I sent to. And within 2 or 3 days, I had the response from David saying, "Absolutely love it." So I had been, I had a connection anyway with Reflex because I had, in their very first competition, I think, I had got third place.
Yes.
And so I'd already had, and I submitted pieces for their online stuff. So there was already a feeling that there was a connection. And he was very quick to get me the contract. I did get a message about it 2 weeks later from someone saying, oh, we're coming up to Christmas and I'll have a think about it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, actually, I've already got the contract. In a way, I wish I maybe had held back because I'm not quite sure how to do this. It was published in the UK.
Yeah.
It was distributed in the UK, but it's never distributed
here
in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So, and it's a very New Zealand book.
Yeah.
So I imported and bought in some, and I have them and I sell them. And actually, 2 weekends ago at Akaroa, I sold 8 in one go.
That the Akaroa Writers,
Writers Festival. So that was like, woohoo!
Yes, absolutely.
Summer selling. So I am sad that because he was a new publisher, he didn't have those connections with a New Zealand distributing and marketing and so on. And at the time that it came out, it was about a month before Avis also came out. So I didn't have the time, the energy necessarily to be doing that.
Yeah.
And so there were things I would do differently and I would seek better advice around maybe also, I have to go back and look at my contract. Am I able also to publish it in New Zealand? What's the deal?
Yeah.
So it was published in the UK.
Yeah.
I do know that it got picked up by one university.
Yeah.
And is being used as a set text for their third level
creative
writing students.
That is fabulous.
I got sent some questions.
Wow.
So those things are fabulous. And as you say, it's had really lovely reviews.
Yeah.
But not in New Zealand, in Australia and in the UK.
Let's hope that changes.
So
I've had no luck finding the review in the British writing magazine Writing. I think it was probably in the December 2019 issue, which I can't seem to access online via my library. If anyone out there has that issue and the review of Heather's book, then please get in touch. However, I did come across another brilliant review in the Canadian online literary magazine called Literary Heist. This review was written by Ryan Brinkhurst in December 2019. He says in his review titled, A Review of Heather McQuillan's Where Oceans Meet. Do you love poetry? Me too. Okay, so some people don't like poetry. Most of them aren't reading a literary magazine right now. But even some people who love a literary article won't show much interest in poetry. Now that I have that out of the way, Where Oceans Meet is a book of Heather McQuillan's flash fiction stories. So why the hell am I talking about poetry? McQuillan isn't only giving you an interesting piece of fiction to read and ponder on. She is giving you a carefully crafted story where each word has been thoughtfully chosen. Imagine a cold weekend afternoon, sitting by the fire, drinking red wine, tea, hot chocolate or a Jagerbomb. You open up Where Oceans Meet and read aloud. The earth and him, they were one. When his legs pounded, the impact formed strong bones, fibula, tibia, femur. From the flash fiction, Mothers of Miners. While the book is full of stories and not poetry, it is so very poetic in nature. I couldn't help but read stories aloud, and I found that rereading them made me learn new things about them, just like poetry. Reading the flash fiction, 2 milligrams and All is Silence, you quickly see how McQuillan uses metaphor and carefully chosen structure with verses like, after a lifetime of swallowing words, her esophagus is lined with arguments that blister the walls. Things unsaid stick in her craw so that a doctor must push down a tube and lens to see what it is that obstructs her gullet. While she writes very good poetic work, she also tells a great story. At times you'll find her words chilling and final. When she writes things like, my father was improvident. He ran out of time in an ocean rip. His final breath, when I was only 11, was salt. In Your Father Carries Time in His Pocket. New Zealand writer Heather McQuillan blurs the line between flash fiction and poetry, which makes Where Oceans Meet great for everyone from a Jagerbomb slamming flash fiction reader to a tea-sipping poetry enthusiast.
So it's been out a while now. Yeah. But
so 2019. So just for those people who are curious about working with an offshore publisher, and you said you sat in bed and you said, I'm not going to get out of bed until I've, you know, submitted to however. So one assumes that you did, you took it upon yourself, you did your own research of small, you obviously worked out that it should needed to go to a small press.
It needed to probably be a small press.
A small press.
Because nobody at that time in New Zealand was publishing short story collections. There have been since.
Yeah.
And since then, there are quite a number
who
have published flash fiction collections. Oh. And it's been picked up by university presses and so on. So, I was at the wrong time. Again, maybe if I'd waited a year or 2 years, I don't know. But I'm still incredibly proud of that book. And
I think it's a wonderful...
I think they'll stand for a while. And I have a box of them in my secret cupboard upstairs.
Your secret cupboard. I think it's a great book. And I think now that you've told the story about how it came about, that this is like the end of your, you know, your work, your master's.
That's my master's thesis.
This is your master's. Mm. And it's a masterful master's.
Thank you.
Really and truly. And for anybody wanting to, you know, delve into or give flash fiction a go, it's a wonderful reference book for those, because you've got all lengths, all shapes, all sizes. You cover everything, and it is, I'm not at all surprised that a university has picked it up. That's fabulous. That's really exciting.
It is. It's lovely,
isn't it? We need our New Zealand people now to open the cover and have a read and pick it up and, you know.
Well, they can contact me, and I've got them in my cupboard upstairs, so if anyone wants a copy.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. Oh, I'm so pleased.
But some lovely things have happened around that flash fiction, because a number of stories, I've had three publications now in the International Abysmal Fictions Collection.
Wow. Yep, fabulous.
Which is wonderful. Yeah. And I have been invited to contribute to other anthologies and so on in the UK and in America and in New Zealand. So,
and it's wonderful getting through your own, you know, your own actions, you've managed to get yourself published offshore. And that is not an easy thing for New Zealanders to do. And it's certainly a bit of a mindset, like you've really got to get, I think for a lot of people it's the mindset. They think it seems like such a challenge and such a hard ask to get your work offshore. But you've done it. You did it.
I did it.
Yeah.
But, and is there another flash fiction collection? Not at the moment, because the children's novels have taken back over.
Yeah.
But I'm still aiming for there. I do have a novella in flash that is about a third of the way through that I was very intrigued by, that idea of telling a story with different fragments so that each small chapter must stand alone but also be part of the whole.
Yes, the bigger picture.
The bigger picture. And so that, again, is still sitting there, and one day... It might pull back out again.
Yeah.
Because that pulling out of things that you've done before is going to reference this next book here.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to The Author's Tale. I do hope you've enjoyed part three of Heather's story. You can find out more about Heather and request a copy of her book, Where Oceans Meet, at her website, heathermcquillanwriter.com. If you happen to live out of New Zealand, you can purchase a copy of Where Oceans Meet at the publisher's website, www.reflex.press. Join me next time for part four of Heather McQuillan's tale. The Author's Tale is presented and produced by me, Stephanie Frewin. You can contact The Author's Tale by email, theauthorstale@yahoo.com. This podcast has been brought to you by Edition Audiobooks, working with you to bring your book to life. Find out more at editionaudiobooks.com.